All right, so Nun Tan Amud Aleph, starting from Mei Tevei 2, 4, 6, eight lines down from the top. So right, we closed yesterday on the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel and Rav Adar Ba'ava, right? Whether what was the actual takanot of Chazal? What was tachat what? Meaning that Rav and Shmuel believed that mizonos were tachat masa yadeha, right? That she whatever she her production was exchanged for the mizonos that he provides her. And the ma kesef, her weekly allowance, right, was in exchange for the motor masa yodeh from that, which is an excess, which we'll see today, the amount that she is supposed to produce. Then Rav Adar Ba'ava argued on that. Rav and Shmuel believed that they were metakein shchiach l'shchiach, right? Masa yodeh is shchiach is common, so are mizonos. And then Rav Adar Ba'ava, on the other hand, believed that what? It was the ma kesef, her allowance gave her, was in exchange for the mizonos. Why? Because those are both the lokayit, right? Whereas motor, her regular production was in exchange for the regular production was in exchange for the ma kesef, because those were both fixed, and the motor plus the mizonos, which are not fixed, those were tachat those the other. All right, so Meitveis. Now the Gemara is going to challenge each of the positions. Tiknu mizonos tachat masa yodeh. So you see what? Mizonos are in exchange for masa yodeh. That sounds like Rav and Shmuel. So what does Rav Adar Ba'ava do with this? Ema tachat motor masa yodeh. Just amend it to read motor masa yodeh, and then it'll work for Rav Adar Ba'ava as well. Tashma. Im eno noten la ma'a kesef l'tzorcheha. So if she doesn't get the ma'a kesef, she doesn't get her allowance, then masa yodeh shelah. Her production is her own. So the Gemara says, that sounds like who? Like Rav Adar Ba'ava, right? That the ma kesef, the allowance, weekly allowance, goes for the masa yodeha. So ema, so let us say what? Motor masa yodeha, shalah. So we'll amend it to read motor masa yodeha, which will go like Rav and Shmuel. Okay? V'ha lak tani on this, so don't we have a statement said? Mayo salo. What does she produce for him? Mishkol chamesh shlaim b'sheti b'Yehuda. So the requirement we're going to see in a second in the Mishnah is that what? That she has to produce 5 shlaim in weight of production of sheti, which are the right. There are two types in the warp. There's two directions: there's sheti and arev. And sheti, for some reason, are harder to twine, and therefore she has to produce 5 shlaim worth of sheti each week in Yehuda. Shein eser shlaim b'Galil, the shlaim in Yehuda weigh twice as much as they did in Galil. So in the Galil, she has to produce 10 shlaim worth. So if the you see over here that what on this it says kamav leida. So I'm sorry. So based on that, what do you see? You see that here we were just talking about mizonos, right? Masa yodeha, right? And then we say, what's the weight of masa yodeha that she has produced? So the Gemara says, Hachi kamar, masa yodeha kamahavi deleida motu dido. Right? So you can't, how much is her production to know how much the motor is? Right? We just amended what the Mishnah to read like this. Tashmai meno noten la ma kesef l'tzorcha masa yodeha shelah. Right? Which sounded like Rav Adar Ba'ava. That what? The allowance went for her regular production, right? Then we amended that to read what? That it's the excess, right? Then that brisa continues, or our mission even continues, and then what? Defines and says how much she has to produce. So it sounds like, exactly like Rav Adar Ba'ava, that the continuation of the mission would be what? Allowance is for production, and then how much is production? That would be the logical sequence of the Mishnah. But if you mend the Mishnah, or the Brisa, so you mend the Brisa to read what that her ma'a kesef, her allowance, goes for her excess production, and then you define what her production is. Doesn't have the sequencing, doesn't work. So the Gemara says, oh, no problem. What? No. What are they? How do you read this? Masi yadea kama habi. How much is her normal production? Delay the motor, though, because then how do you know what the excess production is if you don't know what the normal production is? So kama, how much is the motor? I mean, sorry. Leida motor didok kama. Mishkol chamesh shlaim b'sheti b'Yehuda sheneser shlaim b'Galil. So it was defining what the regular production is in order to know how much the excess production is. So Amar Shmuel, halacha k'Rabbi Yochanan hasanbar. Right, so that was the machlokus in our Mishnah on the previous Nun Chedam Beis. It was machlokus between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yochanan ben Asandla, right? When it came to the motar, Rabbi Meir says it's hekdesh, right? And Rabbi Yochanan ben Asandla says it was chulin. Shmuel comes along and says the lacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Asandla. Umi amar Shmuel hachit? Does Shmuel really believe such? Right? Because what's if he paskins like Rabbi Yochanan ben Asandla, right? Then what? Then we know that what's the halacha? Rabbi Meir holds what we tried to say otherwise yesterday, but really Rabbi Meir holds that you are makdish dovar shelo bali olam. You're allowed to be makdish something that's not in existence. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Asandla is arguing on him and saying that you can't do such a thing. So now Shmuel over here that we said before, Rav and Shmuel say what? What did Rav and Shmuel say versus Rav Adar Bar Abba? Rav and Shmuel were arguing in the position of Rabbi Meir earlier, right? Because they were saying, when does it kodesh according to Rabbi Meir? Is it achar miso? Or is it even mechayim during our lifetime? Right? So now, it must be what? So if they were arguing about that, then Rabbi Meir's position is what? Dover shalom bo le'olam is kodesh, right? Just a question of when. Because Rav Shmuel says achar miso, that means when he passed it like Rabbi Yochanan Hassanler, he's saying that we don't hold like that. We don't hold that Dovash Lo B'Olam can be Kodesh. And does Shmuel really say such a thing? Hat's not. We have a Mishnah, right, where Shmuel passed into Halacha, sounds like he passed into like Rabbi Meir. Konim Shani Oselipichu Eino Tzarech Lahafir. Right, so now if she says that I'm not going to produce anything for you, right, Konim Shani Oselipichu, Konim is a Lashon Neder, that I will not produce, you cannot get any Anoa from, you know, what I produce. So, Eino Tzarech Lahafir, the husband does not need to nullify such a neder. Why? Because she is automatically Meshuba to him to produce. So this is not like, this is like Reish Lakish on the previous sermon, not like Rav Huna, right? Rav Huna yesterday said that she gets to make the choice. She gets to make the choice. She could make such a neder. So this must be according to who? This has to be according to Reish Lakish, who says what? That it's the woman, it's up to the man. I mean, that she is Meshuba to him for her production, and then he gives her Mizonos. So here, he says, you don't have to do any hafara. Why? Because there's nothing to worry about. She owes him that money, and he can't take it. She can't take it away. No, Rabbi Akiva says, what? You can never be so exacting, right? She owes him production, but that's a fixed amount of production. If it's not exactly the right amount, if she gives a little more than the exact amount, then already he's been getting hanah from her from something that she does not owe him. So he says, do a hafara for that excess, for above the level that she's supposed to produce. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri Amar, Yefer. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, what? Listen to this. He says, do a hafara, let the husband nullify it. Why? Shema Yigarshena. Maybe he'll divorce her. Uteya Sura Lachzor. Because what happened? He'll divorce her. When he divorces her, the neder will take effect. Because while she's Meshuba to him, when she's married, she can't take it away. But once they get a divorce, what? She's no longer Meshuba to him. If she's no longer Meshuba to him, then what? Then the neder will take effect. Then, if he wants to take her back as a wife, the neder will already have been in effect, and he won't be able to take her as a wife. So he says, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, well, think about the future. But what do you see from Yochanan ben Nuri? That you can be makdish, dovar shelo bali olam. Why? Because when does he say the neder is going to take effect? The neder will take effect only after the divorce. Right? After the divorce, the neder will take effect, which is a davar, shelo bali olam, is something that does not exist yet. Her production after their marriage is way in the future. So certainly, that is davar, shelo bali olam. And what do we see right out? Bamar Shmuel, lochak Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Shmuel says the lacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. So over here in the Mishnah from, right, the Mishnah that we just read over here about Konem, Shmuel paskins like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, who says what? That you can be makdish, or you can make a ned there. That's davar, shelo bali olam. Whereas in our Mishnah, he's passing like Rabbi Yochanan ben Sandler, who says what? That you cannot be makdish davar shelo bali olam. So how do we reconcile that? So Gemara says, Ki amar lo Shmuel halacha k'Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri la dafa. No. Let's try to say it this way. When Shmuel said halacha k'Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, it's not because of his core halacha, but rather for the excess. He likes the halacha ben Nuri. So Gemara says, if that's the case, lema either halacha k'Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri la dafa. Say that explicitly. Right, that's a little strange to say what halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, and he really meant halacha like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri for the excess production. Inami ain halacha katana kama, or say the halacha is not like the tana kama that you don't need a hafara, or inami halacha k'Rabbi Akiva That is the position of Rabbi Akiva. Why do you need to nullify it? Because what? Rabbi Akiva says, because of the excess. So say halacha like Rabbi Akiva. It's a little strange to say halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri when you really meant halacha is like Rabbi Akiva. It doesn't make so much sense. I'll just note here, we're reading the Gemara according to the way Rashi's Gerson, the way Rashi describes it, which is that the hadafa, he's only talking about the excess amount. Because Rashi points out, even in his own pshat, that the excess amount here, if we're talking about hadafa being the excess amount, the Gemara could have asked the question, that's still a davar shelo baliola. Even the excess amount, after you get divorced, is still, what? Davar shelo baliola. It doesn't exist now. Right? So now, Rashi says that they don't ask that question because they have other questions now. Rabbeinu Tam changes he says, well, let's not explain it that way because he says a little more stronger than I would say, Perisha Kuntris Mugumgum. Perish Rashi is messed up. And he says, he himself admits that there's a problem. So when he says the Hadafa is the Hadafa of the Baal, right? The excess that the husband might give. Vadarcha Yagari is Vinema Aloha Katana Kami, Nama Ein Aloha Karabi Akiva. Because of that, he has to then, when he says Adafa Motar, he means not the the excess of the husband, and he says you have to change the Gerson now in Ein Halacha, you'd have to say the Ein Halacha Karabi Akiva or Halacha Katana Kama. Right? That either he has to change the whole Gerson here, just pointing it out, just so that you know that we read it like Rashi, but Tosfos reads it different because Rabbeinu Tam explains the word Hadafa differently than Rashi does over here. Okay. Now the Gemara still has to reconcile Shmuel, because he passed him like Rabbi Yochanan Sandler in our Mishnah, and he passed him like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri in the Mishnah that we brought down earlier about Konin. Alright, so now Gemara says, well, Amar Rabbi Yosef, Konomot Kamart? You're talking about Konin, the Mishnah we brought, right, that talks about Konin, shiny Konomot. Konamot, that's an unusual type of nether. Why? Because a person can aser his friend's objects on him. Therefore, a person can be makdish something that didn't come into existence yet. Why? So usually when we say someone can aser something or bring makdish something, we talked about this yesterday, you need ownership, right? You need to have ownership and control in order to be makdishes. What's unusual about koname is what? You are what? Assuring your friend's objects on you. Meaning that you're able to take a nether that what? I will get no benefit, or one will get no benefit from someone else's possessions. So you're talking about something you don't own, and you're saying I won't get any benefit from them. So this konamot, this whole idea of nether is already unusual, and because of that, possibly somebody can be makdish dovar shelo ba'al li'olam, right? Someone can be makdish something that does not come into existence. So Amar Abaye, Bishlama Adam Oser Peres Chaver Alav. Person can what oser his friend's objects on him. She can adam oser peiro taval chaveiro, because the person can oser his own possessions on someone else. So now, in each of those two cases, what? He has one side of ownership, right? There are two parties here. There is him and his friend. So in that case, what? He has ownership over one side of it, meaning that he has his friend's objects that he osers on himself, or the other way around. His objects he osers on his friend. So in each of those are comparable cases where he has at least one side belongs to him. So that's what Abaye is saying. Bishlam Adam Oser Peret Chaver Olav. The reason a person can what? Make Oser to himself, his friend's objects. Shekain Adam Oser Peret Aval Chavero. Because he can also Oser his stuff on someone else, meaning where he has one side of connection to it. Yes, sir. Davar Shalom Bali Olam Chavero. From that you can say what? That a person can ask for something that doesn't come into existence yet. Shekain in adam oser peirot chaveru al chaveru. Because what? In that instance, if davar shelo ba'al olam, you have neither side. Right? You don't own the stuff yet because it's not in existence. And number two is what? You're trying to ask it on your friend who is also not yours. It's not yours. So in this case, both sides are not yours. The objects are not yours. And what? Your friend is not, you don't have a balance over your friend, and yet you're still able to answer it. It's not comparable. The cases aren't comparable. So, El Amar Rav Huna B'Reid Rav Yeshua, Be'omeret Yikadshu Yadai Lo'Seyem. Right? So, the case is here. This we had yesterday also. What? The case is that she is makdish her hands. Right? If she's makdish her hands, that is what? Yadayim Innu Be'olam. Because her hands are in the existence already. Right? So, that's something where it's not Tavash Lo'Bali Olam. So where it says, "V'hi chamer hachi mi me'akdisho." So what? You solved one problem, which is what? This problem of a dover shelo b'di olam. But in the meantime, does it really work? Ha mishabed lei. Right? He said, she's already what? She's already mishubatim. She has produced for her husband. So how could it be what? That even when she words it differently, words it by saying it's about something that's already in existence. What's that? Her hands. She words it that I'm thinking that my production of my hands, right, will not be able to be used. So that is a davar shel olam, not a davar shel b'di olam. But nevertheless, what she's already mishubad, she's already, he has a lien on her production already. If she has a lien on her production, then what? Then that doesn't help you. Because why? And the amar l'chi migarsha. She's going to say what? It's usur when he eventually gets divorced. Once she does that, umi iki mide de'ilu hashalo kodesh ulukame kodesh. Is it possibly to be makdish something that what? Today she has no control over, and yet what? She's being makdish it for the future. Right? Can you do such a thing? So, amar rabbi Eloi alamalo. Why can't you do such a thing? Ilu aomer l'chaveru sode zushani mocher l'cho l'sheke'eche right? Or tikdash. That what? This field that I what sold to you, that when I buy it back, I am going to be makdishit. Milo kodesh. Does that not kodesh? So you see what? Even though what? He doesn't have control over it, he's able to be makdishit for the future. So Gemara says, Matkifla Rabbi Yirmiyah, Midomi. Those cases aren't comparable. Hasim biyodalakdisha hacha. He owns it right now. He's about to sell it, so he can make it. He could make a kodesh now before he sold it, but instead he ends up going and selling it. So then here, ain biyodo lagarish atzmo. She has no ability to get divorced right now that she can be makdish now. To say that in the future she will get it. Alav dami alo omer lechaveru. This is more comparable to the case of what sadezu shemacharti lecha. This field that I already sold to you, not that I'm going to sell to you, but I already sold to you. Right, that once I buy it back from you, it'll be kodesh. That doesn't work. So too over here in our case, what? It also shouldn't work that she's able to asser her production after the divorce. Are those really comparable? Over here in the case of the field, what? The actual field and the produce of the field belong to what? The buyer. Hacha gufa biyoda, who, right, that here, the hands belong to her. It's just the production of the hands that don't belong to her. Halo damia, what's the comparable case by fields? Elo laomer lechaveru sadezu shemashkanti lecha. This field that I gave to you as collateral, likashev dena, when I redeem it, mimcha tikdash. Right, then it will be kodesh. The kodesh, that is kodesh. All right, because why? Because if he makes it into a mashkon, he still has quasi-ownership over it, because it does not become the buyer's until what? Until he defaults on the loan, right? The buyer has some claim on it, so he can't, right? He may not be able to be makdish it now because of the buyer's lien, but in the future, he will be able to because it will be his. So, matilav rishisha breder vidi midomi. Over there, he has the ability to redeem it. Meaning that if he pays back the loan, he can remove the lien on the property. So he can take care, control of the property immediately. Over here, what? She can't create the divorce. She can't generate the divorce now. That what? This field that I made for you, a mashkon, as a collateral for 10 years. Meaning that he's unable to redeem it prior to that point. Right? That after I redeem it from you, it will be kodesh, the kodesh, that works. Gemara says, maskelav Rav Asha, mitomi. How does that compare? Hasam lesser shonim miyo biyodo lifdoto. Here, in the case, after 10 years, he still has the ability to take action on the field. Hachayim biyodo lagarshet samar liolo. She never gets control over her hands until he gives her a divorce. Elo amar Rav Yashi. So this is the conclusion of the Gemara. Konamot ka'amart. This nether that she took was a koning. Konamot, shiny konamot. Konamot work differently because kedusha sagufninu. They work like kachim. Like what? Konim is like a lashon of kodesh. And kachim, when it has kedusha saguf, mean there are two ways to make kodesh, something kodesh. One is what? Something that can go on the mizbeach or can be used for the mizbeach. You can be makdish kedusha saguf. For instance, an animal. An animal that you make kodesh, that's roi to go on the mizbeach, is kodesh b'kedushas aguf. There's also something called kedushas berech habayis, which means what? Something that cannot be used on the mizbeach, that you make kodesh, it's for its monetary value. You will redeem it and get its monetary value. So, for instance, if you are makdish a piece of wood that is not usable on the mizbeach for burning, or something, you makdish a pig for whatever reason, you makdish a pig or a dog, then obviously those don't go on the mizbeach. You can sell those items for their monetary worth, and that money goes to the Beis Hamikdash. So over here we're talking about kedushas aguf. Something that's tofes is a much stronger kedusha because you can never redeem it. That kedusha ukedirovo, d'omer rovo, rovo has a principle, hekdesh, chametz, v'shikrur, mafkim, idei shibud, can undo a lien on a property. And generally when you have the lien in a property, that lien can survive any transaction. That's why when the buyer buys it, the lien still exists on the property and you can go take it back from the buyer. There are three things that what? That can eliminate the lien. What are that? Hekdesh, chametz, and shechur. Right? So why is that? What are those abilities? What are those things that she can do? One is hekdesh, that we just spoke about. That is, if you makdish, for instance, if an animal is collateral, if you have an animal that's collateral for a loan, and then one goes ahead and what is makdish it to the base of Migdash, and it can go on the mizbeach, for instance, say a sheep that can go on the mizbeach, that person's makdish it, then the lien is gone. The collateral is gone as collateral, and the lien disappears. That upends the lien that was on this property. Chametz. Chametz is another thing, meaning that chametz, if a goy lends money to a Jew, and a Jew gave over chametz, right? Meaning gave over chametz as collateral to the non-Jew, then you would think what?
To a non-Jew,
because then what? Then when Pesach comes, right over here, we want it to be what? That when Pesach comes, it really belongs to the guy. If it belongs to the Jew when Pesach comes, then it's become Oser Behano. So the Jew really wants it to be what? Bishibud wants to be in the ownership of the guy. Right? So now all of a sudden Pesach comes, right? And it's Chametz that comes. The Chametz takes away the Shibud, upends the lien that the guy has on it, that his ownership within the Chametz, and makes it Oser Behano. You can see that over here. You can see it in Rashi. Chametz asay chametz pukutuki la'avid kachamim. He made his chametz a directed lien, meaning that he made this the particular collateral for a loan. Be'giya Pesach, and Pesach came. Isur chametz mefkiyo mishibud la'avid kachamim. It takes away the collateral, the lien that the non-Jew has on it. V'neser ba'ano. It becomes asur ba'ano, right? Which is not what you want to happen. You want it to really be in the goy's ownership during this period of time, so that it will not become osur b'ano. Chometz undoes that lien. V'shichrur, the last one is what? When you free a slave. For instance, again, if you made a slave collateral towards a loan or for some debts that you have, and then you go ahead and free the slave, that upends, the lien disappears in these cases. So you see what? That there are certain items that can upend the shibud. So just like what hekdesh can upend the shibud, so too konamot, which function like hekdesh, that was the statement of Rav Ashi, konamot are just like kedushas aguf, and therefore they can undo what? They can undo a shibud. So over here, also, what's the problem that we're having so far is what? That the woman is taking a koneim, and what she can undo, which she's taking a koneim, and the husband has a shibud. He has a learn, he has a first right to her production, and how can she take a nether to aser it? So Gemara says, no problem. Koneim can undo a shibud. Now, what's the problem? What we were saying the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, that what do we worry about? We worry about it only after she gets divorced. But if a koneim is so powerful that it can upend the lien, she should be able to take the nether right away. Because the only rights he has to her production is what? The lien on, he has a directed lien on her production. That's the case. If she takes a koneim, she'll work right away. Why are we waiting until after divorce? So it says, v'niktosh mahashto. Let it be kodesh, right? If that's the fact, right? If that's the case, then it should be right away. Her production is kodesh, right? So almuas, my answer's up. Almua rabbanon shibude debal. The chachamim strengthened the shibud of the baal, the heket liktosh mahashto, that she tiktosh mahashto. She's unable to undo it for now. Meaning that when the Chachamim allowed for the Shibud, meaning that Shibud, the lien that the husband has on her production, they strengthen it so much that it's unable to be undone by even one of these three things. Even Hekdesh or her nether of Koneim cannot undo it. So when does that Shibud go away? That Shibud goes away once she is what? Once they are divorced. Once they're divorced, then that debt goes away and it can undo the lien that he had on, oh, there's no lien anymore because they're divorced, he has no rights to it, and therefore the hektesh or the konim will take effect at that point in time. Okay? But again, so now how do we solve just a quick chazara on what we did? It's a lot of cases that were brought down. So we do a quick chazara. Is that what's the problem? What problem are we having? The basic problem stems from Shmuel's position. Shmuel said the locha is like Rabbi Yochanan Asandler in our Mishnah, and says it's like Rabbi Yochanan Menuri in the Mishnah of Kone. When it's like Rabbi Yochanan and Sandler in our Mishnah, we know from Shmuel's position on the previous daf that he thinks Rabbi Meir holds what? The Dover Shlobo Leolam, you're allowed to be Makdish, which means Rabbi Yochanan and Sandler says you are not allowed to be Makdish Dover Shlobo Leolam. So if that's the case, Shmuel's paskening like Rabbi Yochanan and Sandler that what? Dover Shlobo Leolam does not work. You can't be Makdish it. Then we have him over here coming and say a woman takes a neder that her production is also to her husband. And yet, what? He passed into halacha like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. When do we have to worry about that? Only after the divorce. So what do you see over here? He's being makdish, she's being makdish, or she's asering something that's shelo bali olam, the production after the divorce. So that's a steer in Shmuel's position, because Shmuel passed into halacha like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri here. So you see in one place he holds, davar shelo bali olam does not work. And over here in the Mishnah over here, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, it does work, right? Because he's able to aser something after the divorce. So you see, that's the steer in Shmuel we have to deal with. So the Gemara first tries to amend Shmuel's position to say it's only l'hadofa. We said there's one explanation in Rashi, one explanation in Tosfos, whatever that means. Gemara rejects it because that's a difficult explanation. The Gemara's conclusion then is what? That it's a case where she was makdish her hands, meaning that she says makdish esayadai eliyoseim, that I already she makes that's a davar shabal, that is a davar shabalam. Right, so now if it's a davar shebaolam, now we've got rid of that problem. If it's a davar shebaolam, then Shmuel in both cases is paskening what? It's a davar shebaolam, that's why he's allowed to aser. Now the Gemara gets onto a side issue. Well, okay, fine, that's a davar shebaolam, but how is she able to be makdish something after she gets divorced? Something that you don't have control or ownership over today, how are you able to what? Be makdish it for the future? That was the problem the Gemara has now. So the Gemara goes through a number of cases. Well, if you have a field that I own today and then I'm going to sell it to someone else, I can say in the future when I buy it back, I'm going to be makdish it. There, the Gemara says, that's not a good comparison. Why? Because here I own it today and then I'm going to sell it. So the Gemara goes, okay, the next case. A case where it's already sold, right, to the other guy, and he says, when I redeem it, what? I'll be makdish it. Does it work in that case? So the Gemara says, no, that doesn't work. So the Gemara says, well, that's not really a good comparable case. Why? Because over here in the future, what? Over here, he has no control over it. Over here, Rapapa says, "Mi dummy, hasam gufa peres biyoda." Right? Over there, when he sold it, he sold everything. I mean, he sold the field, and he sold all the production of the field. Over here, she still owns her hands. She just sold, the production is what is gone. So what's the comparable case? The Gemara says, what? This is only compared to a case where he says to a friend, I have a lien. He gives a lien on his property to someone else. That's exactly what comparable case. Over here, the husband has a lien on her production. Over there, the field, you have a lien on the field. Right? So in that case, when he says, in the future, when I redeem the field, when I take away your lien, I pay back the loan, I'll mock the shit, does it work? The answer is yes. So to over here, it should work when she does it in the future. Right? Says two cases aren't comparable. In that case, he has the ability to redeem it whenever he wants. Can she get her production back whenever she wants? No, because she can't define when the divorce happens. Gemara says, all right, we'll compare it to a case of what? Where he makes it into a collateral for 10 years. Right? We'll compare that case to the collateral for 10 years. So after he goes, after 10 years, it'll be Kodesh, it works. So Gemara says, again, that's not comparable. Why? Because after 10 years, he still gets control, can make the decision. Here, she'll never get control over it. So what does Gemara say in the end? The Gemara says in the end that this is a unique case. Right? We don't have a comparable case because Konamot, Hekdesh, has the ability to undo a Shibud, has the ability to undermine a lien. So if that's the case, what? So to anybody who made something hektesh will undermine the lien. So too, when she says koneim, it undermines the husband's lien. So then the Gemara says, oh, that's a problem. Why then? If you're undermining the lien should be undermined from now. Why do you have to wait until she gets divorced? That's the conclusion of the Gemara that what? That amua the shibude of the husband. The husband's lien was strengthened enough that she can't undermine it until after the divorce. So then that helps us with Shmuel's position. And what's Rabbi Yochanan, according to this explanation? What happened in our Mishnah there by Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri? What happened? This is a case where she says, Konim Masa Yadai Leoseim. She says what? That she's makdish her hands, meaning that which is Dover Shabali Olam. So that helps us with Shmuel with the our Mishnah of Paskin like Rabbi Yochanan Sandler. Number two is, why does it only undermine when she gets to a divorce? Because the Chum strengthened his Shibut. and she can undermine a shibud, right? Because of that strength of shibud that the chachamim gave her. Ah, after she gets divorced, then the shibud can then it can undermine any lien or any or can go into effect because what at that point in time the shibud takes effect. Now, why does it take effect? Because if you can't do it today, why does it take effect in the future? That's because of the way konamot work. Hekdesh works that you can undermine it today, so therefore it'll undermine in the future. It's just that the chachamim removed her ability to undermine. Really, she could undermine. The chachamim strengthened that shibud, and that gives her the right. So she really did undermine it from today. The chachamim let him keep it for a longer duration, even though she undermined it, but then when the divorce takes effect, it's undermined. All right, so there's a quick chazara on that piece. All right, Mishnah. Now this is obviously going to sound strange to our modern sensibilities, but this is Elam Lachotcha Isha Usilabala. This is what a woman must do for her husband. All right. So first of all, Tochenet. She's got to mill. She's got to mill the wheat into flour. Ve'ofe, and then bake bread. Umechabeset, do the laundry. Right. Mivashelet, she has to cook. Umenika et benot, she has to nurse her child, or his child over here. Then she has to make the bed, and she has to work in wool. She has to produce. She has that. This is the production that we've been talking about.
Five slime,
right? Which is at the end of the mission. The mission is going to mention that at the end, right? Exactly. If he brings her one help, one woman to help, meaning that he brings her one maid servant, she doesn't have to mill and she does not have to bake. And she doesn't have to do laundry. Shtayim, if he brings her two maidservants, she doesn't have to cook, and now she doesn't have to nurse. Pretty amazing, I would say. After she gets her second shivcha, she's out of those. So again, you could ask, we're going to deal with it later on, but one question is, once she gets one, if she has to do all of this herself, why, when she gets one help, can't she replace her and do everything for us? That's number one. Number two is, you know, this is just a little stranger, but the fact is that she gets second help. She doesn't nurse anymore. All right? So, I mean, I don't know, I guess we get nurses today. Modern day, they get nurses. But still, I mean, nursing is a personal, right, connection with the baby. I don't know why it's something that would decision whether you have a nurse or, I mean, whether you have a maidservant or not. But at least the Gemara equates the two. Shalosh, if she gets a third maidservant, in matzeth lo tamita, she doesn't have to make the beds anymore. But in osibet semer, then she doesn't have to, what? Then she doesn't have to do any work. But she still has to, if her husband asks her to get something, she still has to listen to her husband. Meaning that she's still meshubat to her husband, that if he asks her to run up into the house and get something, he's outside, go get in the house and get it, she has to go get it. Or run upstairs to the attic and get me something, she still has to listen. Arba, if she gets her a fourth maidservant, then yoshevet b'katedra. Then she can lounge outside. She doesn't even have to run. When he asks her for something, she doesn't even have to run for it. So Mishnah says, Rabbi Lezer Omer, even he gives her 100, she still has to produce, right? She still has to work in, let's call it needlework. Why? Because a woman who has nothing to do ends up having illicit relationships. A person who takes an edit, my wife should never have to do any work. He wanted to be a great husband, says, my wife never has to work. He has to give her a divorce and give her a retain aktuba, because a woman who doesn't, a person doesn't do any work. Person does not have any purpose, they go crazy. Meaning that they need something to give them a sense of purpose, a sense of worth, and therefore if you tell her not to do anything, then the person will go crazy. All right? So this is, again, interesting Mishnah. Right? So we have to deal with now the Mishnah. The Gemara is going to dissect the Mishnah. We'll get to the first part of it now. What do you mean, Tochenet? She mills the actual wheat. The mill, right, I mean, she doesn't run the mill. The mill runs by water, where there's an animal that turns the mill around. What do you mean she mills? So, that she gets it ready. She gets the wheat ready, she gets it out, she takes the flour out afterwards. Not that she's actually physically doing the milling, but that she takes it to the mill and gets it milled. Right. No, that you're talking about a big mill. But if it's a hand mill, then she will at home. She's going to do the hand mill, and she's going to have to work it herself and do the milling herself. Our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Chiya. The Tani, Rabbi Chiya, because Rabbi Chiya learned, Eina Isha El Liofi. So this is the Mishnah at the end of Tanis. If you remember the famous Mishnah at the end of Tanis, Yomim Tovim L'Bnei Yisrael, there were no better days to B'nai Yisrael than Yom HaKippurim and Tu B'Av. Right, so over there, the Mishnah describes on Tu B'Av what used to happen on Tu B'Av, right? They used to go dance out in the fields. And the women used to, right, they used to borrow clothing, and they used to say, they used to call out to the men to come get, to come and get a shidduch with them. And what did they used to say? So the Gemara there talks about, the women who had good yichus used to say, the women who were beautiful used to say, the women who had nothing right to say. So there, Rabbi Chia says over there, ain't a isha el yofi, right? Then he makes two statements. A woman is only for beauty, right? And ain't a isha el libonim, and a woman is only for children, right? To produce children. Right, the Tani Rav Chiya, and he has a third statement, right, to just to add on to this. Ein aisha la takshita isha. A woman's only to what? To wear adorned, to have, be adorned in jewelry. So that's her tafkid, is to wear jewelry. Right, to go and get jewelry and wear jewelry and to look beautiful. So Tani Rav Chiya, I wrote to she aden et ishto, a person who wants to, make his wife, they look beautiful and for her to be cushy and all and feel good. That he should dress her in linen clothing. I wrote that she albin abita, one who wants to whiten his daughter, I guess make her shiny, look great. Yeah, he should feed her young chicks. Yishkena chalav samuchla pirkon, and should close to her reaching the age of puberty, she should feed her lots of milk. Right, so all of these things. What? You see from Rabbi Chia, right, that the idea of a woman is not for her production, right, but rather a woman is for her beauty, for to produce children, to look beautiful. So no, that doesn't go with the doesn't go with the flow or whatever with our Mishnah over here, because our Mishnah says that a woman has certain obligations, work to do, right, and she has even in the Tanoim at the end who said that what even if she has all these maidservants she still should work, right? So that doesn't. So we go with the position of Rabbi Chia.
One might surmise that Rabbi Chia's positions were not popular with the feminists of his day.
Right. If there were any. That's right. I mean, although I guess our Mishnah is not much better in the sense that here these are obligations of the wife to the husband, right? And it's not obvious they give purpose to a woman, but they still are obligations.
They show that she's capable of doing
it. Right, she does have capability. It is a step above.
It's the original endorsement of the trophy wife.
Right, for Rav Chiya, right. That's right, that is right. Let's say that our Mishnah is not like Beis Shammai. Tanya, Nodrash lola nikat bino. She took a nether, right? Or he took a nether, so that she not. She should not nurse his child. Beis Shammai omrim shomet dad mipiv. She pulls out. She's done. She doesn't nurse anymore. So omrim kofim nina kato. Right? She can what? He can force her to continue to nurse. Okay? She took a nether, as she took the nether in order not to nurse anymore. She took a nether, she'll no longer nurse. So Beis Shammai says the nether works and she's done nursing. She's gotta pull it out, done. Beis Hillel Omrim, that he can force her. That's one of the obligations a wife has to her husband, is what? To nurse the child, and therefore he can force her to continue to nurse. Now, nitzgarsha, what happens if they get a divorce? Eino kofa. Then, since she's no longer meshuba to him, right, then he can't force her any longer to what? To nurse the child. Bimhaya makira. But if the child already had started nursing from her, and number two is he will not nurse from anyone else, then notin lascharva kofa minyakto. He pays for her services, but he can force her to nurse him. He can force her to nurse him, but he has to pay for it because why? She's no longer meshubeta to him. Because the child is in danger if there's, there was no formula in those days, right? So there were only two options. One was that the mother nursed her, or you got a wet nurse to nurse him, right? If he would only accept the mother's nursing, then the child was in danger at that point in time because there's no sustenance.
Even as I said, studies show that it's healthier. A child that nurses more is healthier than one who does not nurse.
Right. But there at least there is that option, right, to get out. I mean, here in the divorce, he can force her to come back.
It's like the immediacy of the sakana.
Right. I mean, that you don't have to, right, we wouldn't say that you force a woman to nurse, right? But over there, because of the danger of the child, you would force her to divorce, but he does have to pay for it because she's no longer meshubetet to him. All right. Afilu teima Beis Shammai. Let's say our Mishnah even goes like, Beis Shammai, why? Hachabai maskina kenosha notrahi v'kayim lahu. The case of Beis Shammai is still arguing about her when she took the nether and he upheld her nether. Right? Because Sari Beishamai, who knows Tain Etzba Ben Shinao? And Beishamai says, what? Who's the one causing the problem here? Right? If she, when she takes the nether, again, we said maybe the possibility is that she's trying to check if he really loves her. So she takes the nether, and then he goes, yeah, you're right. You know what? Keep that nether in effect. So once he does that, it's as if he's the one who kind of caused the problem. Once he caused the problem, then he's out of luck, and she doesn't have to nurse anymore.
He has the opportunity to
be. Right. He had the opportunity to make fair and make her feel better, or be made fair and stop this. The fact that he went ahead and was upheld the nether, then it's his problem at this point. She's the one who caused the problem. She took the nether. She shouldn't have expected her husband to be made for it. When she took the nether, that causes the problem. And now he can force her to come back and do it. So that, if that's the case, if that's what they're arguing about, let them argue about her underlying ksuba. Right? Her entitlement to a ksuba here, when she takes the nether, and she can what? If she takes a nether not to get any benefit from her husband. We said before that what? That they have to get a divorce if that's the case. So if you say that what he upheld that nether, you can have the same argument based on Beishama. Is she entitled to her ksuba or not? If you say it's the husband's fault, then she'd be entitled to her ksuba. If we say it's her fault, she would no longer be entitled to ksuba. So why are you saying argue about some strange case of nursing, which is just a subset of the ksuba or obligations to her husband? Talk about her general obligations to her husband like a ksuba. Right, and therefore, why don't they argue in that case? The fact that they don't, Otanya Beishamai Omrim, Eina Menikel, right, that we say that Beishamai says she does not, what? She does not nurse at all, Eina Rotsa, if she doesn't want to, right? They mean that the reason the nether is not a problem in this case is why? Because it's her choice to nurse. Beishamai, right, here, Beishamai, almost in a kula sense, right, they're saying that it's up to the woman to decide whether she wants to nurse or not. It's not up to the husband. Therefore, when she takes the nether is chal. Right, so what do you see from this? That the problem here is you see from this clearly, Beis Shammai does not hold like our Mishnah, that what? It's the obligation of the wife to nurse the child. Because she said, that Beis Shammai just said in this additional price that we brought down, that it's the choice of the woman. So, Elo Mechabarta Masisim Delo Beis Shammai. Our Mishnah is clearly not like Beis Shammai, right? Because Beis Shammai is saying what? That it's the woman's choice to nurse. If it's the woman's choice to nurse, number one, she can aser it. Number two is, it's what? It's not an obligation of the woman to the husband. And our Mishnah reads, what are one of the obligations of a woman to her husband? And it was what? Aminika had been off. That she has to nurse his son. So it's clearly Beis Shammai is not one of the authors of our Mishnah. All right, we'll stop here.
Yeah, so when it was saying Benifim Suba, basically it was saying that the Braisa that quotes the Machlokes Beis Shammai Beis Hillel,
right,
should have argued in Ksuba.
Right, I mean, why not argue about a narrow case like nursing, which is just a subset of the obligations that are just one of the many obligations she has. Talk about Ksuba in general. Talk about argument is about who's responsible here, whose problem
is. It has to do with the iniker part of the Ksuba, so it must...
Well, Hanoi is right. Anyway, well, that's generally... This doesn't have anything to do with the Mishnah. This would allow Beis Shammai to be like our Mishnah. Why? Because over here, if you're saying that the whole machlokas here is when she takes the nether and her husband upholds it, who is the problem here? Is it her, she's the problem, or her husband's the problem? If you say that's what Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are arguing about, then don't argue about just nursing, argue about ksuba in general. Now, he'll have to divorce her. When she says, I can't get any anah, then he has to divorce her because she can't provide their basic obligations that she can't do anymore. That's not a marriage anymore. So you have to get a divorce. Does she get a ksuba in that divorce or not? That'll be the machlokas Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai because it depends who's responsible. If we say it's his fault because he upheld the nether, she won't get a ksuba. If Beis Hillel says it's her fault, she took the nether to start with, she won't be entitled to ksuba. The divorce is being caused by her, she won't be entitled to ksuba. So the Gemara is saying, if you think the machlokas here between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai is about whose fault it is, make it a much bigger machlokas. Argue about ksuba, which is the major issue about whose fault it is. Right? Since we don't do that, that's number one. Since we don't do that, it must be that their machlokas is about the narrow issue of what? Who, if she obligated to nurse
and
or not.
And according to Beis Shammai, it's not a nikkur part of ksuba.
Right, it won't be an ikar part of the ksuba, that's correct.
It's proof of the point.
Right, well, it's not part of the ikar ksuba, but more importantly is that if she's not obligated, our mission says it is an obligation, and this Bryce is saying it's not an obligation, and that's the second Bryce that they bring down. The Beis Shammai clearly states that it's the woman's choice. If it's the woman's choice, it's not an obligation in the ksuba, or an obligation of the that Beis Din says that the woman is meshuba to her husband to do, then they can't go like our mission.
So our mission is clearly not Beis Shammai. It would be a little bit hard to understand if the position of Esau was that when the husband is made for the nether, that by not being made for the nether, it still doesn't become the responsibility of the husband. It would be very hard to understand that.
Why?
Because if he has the ability to be made for any neder that she makes. And he hears it and he chooses not to. How can he hold her responsible? He had the opportunity to do something about it. He chose not to.
Right, but he's saying, look, she did something. I don't like her either. She doesn't like me. I don't like her. She did something silly, took a neder. I'm not going to undo it because then I can get rid of her. Meaning that we'll get divorced and she'll be out with Ksuba. You're right, it's not the easiest
decision. Right, but that's I guess it's semantics.
Right.
He's saying, I don't have to do anything about it, but that, he's making that choice.
If he hears it and does nothing, he doesn't have to be active. He can be passive and it'll take effect.
Right.
Mayfair, he has to be make an active position.
Yeah, but he chooses nothing.
I agree with you. It's not the easiest position to hold. In the end, it's not that. They still really, when the end, they still says that it's an obligation. It's a shibud, and that's why she can't undo it, because it's the shibud of the husband has a shibud that she owes him this nursing, and therefore she can't take a netter to undermine it. That's what we say in the end, the conclusion. But you're right. The earlier position is not as easy to understand.